From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. CAHOOTS was a nationally recognized mental health crisis program that began in Eugene and became a model for other programs around the U.S. So it was strange and a bit sad that this service was discontinued in the city where it started. However, due to a lot of public outcry, the Eugene City Council has been working to try and replace the service, if not exactly, then at least in some similar fashion. Today on the show, you'll hear from our reporter about the next step in bringing back mobile crisis services to Eugene, where it all began. Then, in the second part of the show, another of our reporters will give us the latest on updates and expansion plans at the Eugene Airport, including new infrastructure at Concourse A. That's next on Oregon on the Record. In a state where the sheer number of people suffering mental health challenges and crises is well known, Eugene's own CAHOOTS program was seen as a shining light of local innovation. Sadly, that service was discontinued last year due to budget constraints and contract conflicts. Today on the show, our reporter Nathan Wilk gets us up to date on a possible replacement program to help in the city. KLCC's Nathan Wilk, thanks so much for coming in and talking with us.
Thanks so much, Michael.
Yeah, you have been following the story of CAHOOTS for quite some time. A year ago, it went away. Just give folks a 30,000-foot view of what CAHOOTS was and what happened to it.
Right. So CAHOOTS was a mobile crisis intervention service. Essentially, it responded sometimes in addition, sometimes in place of law enforcement, helping people who were suicidal or homeless, having some mental health crisis or some substance abuse crisis. And the program shut down in Eugene, stopped operating last April, because essentially due to budgetary issues, they said they had to shrink their hours. And then the city of Eugene said, well, this is no longer the contract that we had agreed upon with you in terms of your operating hours. So since then, the program's been gone in Eugene. And of course, there's been a lot of community uproar, many who benefited from this service that have wanted it back.
Yeah. And so the city, in some way or form, wanted to do something. So they did, to a degree. Talk about what they've done to try and replace, maybe not entirely, but to augment service of what CAHOOTS used to do.
Right. So there's two things to note. First, there was already a program that was providing somewhat comparable services called Lane County Mobile Crisis, that run through the county. And so that's, you know, for people who are in those acute crises, need someone to respond to help them. What the city of Eugene identified through a sort of a gaps analysis was that some of the other functions of CAHOOTS, you know, going around doing general welfare checks or helping people who were on the street and needed transportation, you know, needed help getting their ID, these sort of services that CAHOOTS was also known for, that other law enforcement and emergency officials were kind of being asked to step into those roles. So they put out a request for proposal for essentially something along those lines, and that's the news that we come to today.
Yeah, and so they did select an entity. Who'd they select?
Right. So they selected Ideal Option, which is a company. It operates in several states, but it's already doing some things here in Eugene. One, it works with Lane County's jail deflection program. And it also actually partnered earlier this year with the Eugene Police Department to have peer navigators, which is what we're creating here.
Okay.
A peer navigation program. Downtown. So a somewhat similar service run by them is already operating here in downtown Eugene, and some have maybe already seen those workers in the area.
Okay. So not exactly what Cahoots did before the contract was removed.
Right, not exactly. So essentially what they'll do with this new service is they'll send these outreach workers to other high-volume areas that are outside of downtown Eugene, so like the Whitaker, like Highway 99, West Eugene, and so they'll help people who aren't in those active crises navigate to services, and then they'll do follow-up care to say, hey, did that work for you? Did we kind of get you where you're going, need to go? Is there, what else we can do? So, that outreach and community support work that city officials identified was sort of a gap there.
Okay. Do we have an idea of how much it's going to cost?
So this is a one-year pilot program, and they've set aside $500,000 for it.
Okay.
Speaking to Mike Caven, the Eugene Springfield fire chief, he says, this is also to kind of figure out, are there still gaps? What do we need? What would this look like, in a second phase as this sort of year-long program is running?
So you talked to Chief Caven, and I'm curious, from what he said or just what you've been able to glean, is this kind of a release valve for law enforcement or emergency medical services, that sort of a thing?
Well, that's the hope. I think that Eugene Police Department and, fire officials are able to respond to other calls in the community while, setting aside this for those that, maybe can form these relationships with these individuals who are, need these services and kind of help slow down and navigate from a peer perspective. So, certainly.
Yeah. So Nathan, we have a winning bid. What put them over the top? Why did the council select this group?
Right. So what Chief Caven said is that this really met what the city wanted specifically. So there was another competitor here that had gathered a lot of momentum, Willamette Valley Crisis Care, and it was made up of former when it was founded, current CAHOOTS members, people who wanted to recreate that service and kind of carry on that institutional knowledge. What Chief Caven said about that proposal is that it was anchored in how the system used to operate. So they're taking into account the city that Lane County Mobile Crisis Services is providing something for those who were in an acute crisis. And they were looking for this gap, whereas the proposal provided by Willamette Valley Crisis Care had sort of a larger scope and would have also provided some crisis care services. So choosing a proposal that matched the specific needs of the gap that they were trying to fill.
Okay. Did you get a chance to talk to the losing bid? What did they say?
Right. I mean, they were not surprised about this based on the request for proposal that went out, but they were disappointed. I spoke to someone from Friends of Alternative Response who has been pushing to a return to CAHOOTS. And they said, there are limits on this in terms of location and the boundaries that are disappointing, and that it still leaves some gaps, doesn't provide basic medical services like CAHOOTS used to. And so Willamette Valley Crisis Care told me that they're sort of regrouping and looking towards how they may serve the community. And Friends of Alternative Response says they're still pushing for a return to full services like CAHOOTS.
Okay. Let's switch gears a little bit, because you also covered, it's a very sad story in our community. You covered the story of a high-profile drunk driving case in which someone was killed, and you covered the verdict and the sentencing in that case. Just get us up to speed on where that is and how that ended.
Right. So the defendant in that case, in the death of Sharon Schumann, Scott Stolarczyk, was sentenced Wednesday to 6 years and 3 months in prison, plus 3 years of supervised release. He'll also have his driver's license permanently revoked. Of course, he hit Schumann with his car while she was running on the Amazon path in South Eugene. You know, Schumann was a musician. She was an author. She was a University of Oregon professor. She was very well known in the community. He spoke, Stolarczyk, at the sentencing, and he expressed remorse. He said he took full responsibility and he hoped to be a better person. Schumann's daughter, Rebecca Schumann, also spoke there, and she said, you know, that he destroyed two families, his and theirs, but she was compelled towards mercy and she hoped he could make some amends.
Very sad story. Nathan, really appreciate your coverage of these stories and so much more. Nathan Wilk, reporter for us at KLCC. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Michael.
Let's now find out what improvements are being made at the Eugene Airport. KLCC's Zach Ziegler, thanks so much for coming in and talking with us.
Yeah, no problem.
I know you did a story about the airport and some funding that came through. Tell us what's going on at EUG.
Yeah, so there's going to be some work going on eventually. In the Concourse A area, they're getting some money to expand that area. I know anyone who's been in there, Rush is going to be happy to hear that because things can get a little tight at times. You know, there's also some renovation dollars. We're going to see those bathrooms get updated and some other updates throughout the area, like HVAC, you know, heating, ventilation, AC kind of stuff.
Okay, so a lot of infrastructure stuff. This is part of a larger plan, right?
Oh, yeah. They have quite a few plans. I mean, there's eight projects there that are already funded for expansion work, you know, work on the concourse, work on outbound baggage, taxi runway and terminal apron improvements, also some help with parking lot changes, which is definitely something that's going to be welcome for anyone who's ever flown at the holidays. So those things are going on. Plus, there's the big long-term projects that they've talked about that aren't yet funded.
Yeah, and that's kind of the linchpin, isn't it? Is that they've got ideas, they've got really nice drawings, but they still need a lot more money, right?
Yeah, yeah. Concourse C is the big talked about thing. They estimate that will be up around $178 million, plus expansion in baggage claim and ticket counters that are needed on top of that to accommodate that extra concourse. You know, it's something that the airport does really feel it needs, though, because they're saying that the facilities are the limiting factor on growth right now, and growth there has been pretty explosive from 2011 to 2022. They saw a doubling of passengers.
Wow, wow. So the work for this first phase, that's starting now. Do they have an idea of when completion might be?
The hope is 12 to 18 months. Okay. That's their ultimate goal. They have broken ground on one area where the expansion's going to be, but they have to build up to get it to the height where that concourse already is. You know, if you sit in there, it's elevated off the ground because you're getting onto a plane from it.
Yeah.
So that's what they're kind of hoping for at this point is that 12 to 18 month time
frame. Okay. And Concourse A, have they kind of felt like, oh boy, it really has been, you know, pushing the envelope, really, really busting at the seams to some degree?
Yeah, definitely is. And I mean, one of the bigger issues for them is that concourse was designed for regional jets, you know, something that seats about 74 people, but they are getting jets that are flying longer distances and holding more people. The ones that are coming in there hold 120 to 150 people, so it can be a little tough to get them in and also to get that extra amount of people in that they need to fill those six gates with those larger planes.
Yeah, you might not have had a chance to talk to the airport director about this, but I'm just wondering if you've noticed anything in terms of since the government shut down and impacting TSA, have things been pretty smooth the last, say, few weeks there?
I actually did a story about that a couple of weeks ago, and Eugene was one that wasn't impacted too much. The TSA agents kept going. They didn't have the long lines that we're seeing elsewhere, places like, you know, Denver or other larger airports.
Sure.
But one thing that they did have to do to help get through that was they were accepting donations of like non-perishable foods and gift cards to help get the TSA agents through, so they didn't have to, you know, take a break from working there to work somewhere else that was actually paying them.
Yeah, yeah. did Catherine Stevens have any idea, you know, obviously with inflation, with fuel prices and stuff, the way that it's been, are they anticipating a pretty busy summer season?
As always there, it seems like it will be busy. There always seems to be demand for those flights. And I know I've been looking at my summer travel plans, and the tickets aren't getting any cheaper, which is usually a sign of how the airlines feel about things. So I would fully anticipate that, you know, especially knowing that if the limiting factor is size, if someone decides not to fly, it's most likely someone's going to step right in behind them.
Yeah, and it seems like, you know, Eugene Airport isn't the sleepy little airport perhaps it once was. And I imagine a lot of people maybe looking at that saying, boy, you know, for a lot of like international travel or even across country, I'd go to PDX. Eugene is giving them an excuse not to drive 2 hours, isn't it?
Yeah. And I mean, one thing that I think about, I know when I'm booking flights, is do I want to fight the traffic all the way through Portland to the north side of town?
Yeah.
I'm sure there are other people now who are having the added advantage of there's now the free bus that serves several towns, and it has a stop right by the airport. So, you know, if you're living up in, you know, Corvallis or somewhere outside of town, it's a little easier to get to that airport and catch your flight there. So if you're determining, do I want to fight all the way up to get to PDX, or do I just want to hop out of Eugene? Sometimes that looks a little easier, and you're willing to pay a few bucks more to not fight that traffic.
I know I would. Yeah. Zach Ziegler, reporter for us here at KLCC, really appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
All right, thank you.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Monday on the show, you'll hear from the new acting superintendent for Springfield Public Schools and learn how she plans to manage this troubled district. I'm Michael Dunn, host of Oregon on the Record. Thanks for listening.